You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Philip Matthews. Philip, thanks so much for being with me today.
Thanks so much for having me.
So, Philip, I know you're talking to me from North Carolina, and we're going to talk about your work. I guess to begin with, I'm curious what it's like to be working in North Carolina as a writer and artist. Is there an artist community there, or is it what's happening there?
Yeah, you know, this is I'm from Wilson, North Carolina, so I'm currently in my hometown. I'm just coming off of a fellowship, a second year fellowship at the Fine Arts Work Center in Provincetown, and I've returned home actually to finish up a project that I started last year. Working on clearing out my grandmother's home. And so I'm here doing a family project, but it's very much also connected to my creative work. It's connected to my poetry practice. I write a lot about family, a lot about inheritance, both inheritance of objects as well as behavioral patterns or sort of psychic material, which is the reason that I decided partly why I decided to engage this project in the first place. So that's what I'm here doing.
And tell me a little bit about the Provincetown residency and fellowship. What happened there? That seems like a wonderful thing to just be coming off of in July.
Yeah, it was incredible. So I did my first fellowship there in 2016-17, where I wrote the majority of my first book called Witch. It's coming out from Alice James Books this April. And so I went back this past year for the 2018-19. Fellowship here, and it was really powerful to be there and to have returned to the sites of Witch's Making. The book was picked up this past summer, and so that news was fresh, and it just felt really perfect to go back to Provincetown, to go back to those really weird and wonderful landscapes that the Cape provides, and to be able to look again at what I had made, to look again at the book, and to really ask deeply what those poems needed from me now as I prepare for their revision and their release into the world. And so I really worked heavily on sort of crystallizing the container of Witch, and then also began to write new poems as well.
And so when you talk about crystallizing the container, I mean, that's so interesting. You're revising some of those poems that were published, or that's what you most recently did was to revise them? Because that's an interesting process in itself.
You know, some revision, but really what I was working on was determining the order and the structure of the book. I think the biggest difference in it now is when it first was accepted, it was one long breath. There were no sections. And I was able to share the manuscript while I was in Provincetown with some strategic readers, all of whom in one way or another said, you know, I really need some sense of pause, or I need you to sort of let me know where you want to place the emphasis on the movements that are here. And in my mind, they really were. In my mind, the movements of the books were very clear. But I think the sections, which is the biggest edit, will sort of give the reader a better sense of what I was thinking within those arcs that exist in the book.
So I know you're going to read some poems today during this interview, and as we talked about just before the interview started, which the listener doesn't know, is that you're reading these not from the page, but these are memorized. And well, we were discussing it earlier, you know, and I was saying how much I love that idea, that form. It's almost a different form, you know, memorizing and reading poems as opposed to reading off the page. You also said, over the years you've memorized, I don't know, more than a dozen poems and could easily recite them at parties. I want to just ask you about that, because where did you learn that? How did you come upon that? I've interviewed quite a few poets, but you know, I think most of them don't memorize, but it seems to be such a part of the tradition in a way, how kids were once schooled, I imagine, especially 100 years ago. How did you get into memorizing and then bringing them out like that?
You know, I think the broadest answer to that is really tapping into poetry as an oral tradition. But I specifically got interested in it when I saw the poet James Arthur read. And there was just something really keenly present about him reciting poems from memory, and also slightly unsettling to me, the way that the poet is able to really look you in the eye as they're and sustain that kind of contact as they're reciting the poem. And I was really drawn to that. Another poet who I know does this is a former teacher of mine, Timothy Liu. One of the last times that I was in New York, we were sitting at dinner, and Tim just draws this beautiful Jean Valentine poem out of his pocket and recites it over dinner. And I think that there's something to that. There's something about the poem being memorized where you can, pull it out at dinner or at parties or in conversation, that makes it feel as if poetry is just a natural part of the social interaction, and it is a natural part of the social interaction. And so I'm really drawn to that element. And it served me well. Another project that I'm working on is the release of a book called Wig Heavier Than a Boot with photographer David Johnson. It's forthcoming this October from Chris Graves Project. It brings together David's photographs and my poetry. And through this project, Dave and I have done several portfolio reviews with leaders in the photography field. And at those reviews, it's really nice to just be able to say, hey, do you want to hear a poem? And to be able to draw those poems from memory in that intimate setting as well has been really useful. The impulse to do it, it's both practical and also I feel that it means something to me energetically related to the tradition of poetry as an oral tradition.
Yeah, that's fascinating. So which is, I'd like you to... let's recite a poem now. What's the first one you're going to recite as opposed to read?
The first one that I'll read, it's forthcoming from Witch, and it's a poem that I wrote the first year that I was at the Fine Arts Work Center in October 2016. It's called Tarot. At sunrise, the angels arrive with their diet of crabs and clams to crash against the breakwater bridge of rocks. Hundreds shatter, are taken behind the frenzy and after the divining pools of shell water, shells of broken fire, violet and white, wet feathers, red legs, bird shit. I take my mother as a memory down this bridge, sure-footed with healthy knees, joints shifting in their tissue as they should. There is a vision in which seven legs relate to each other on rock. There will be a book, but no grandchildren. There will be a husband, like four birds low over earth. There will be a skin to be in, sword pulled from a crane's heart, sack of meat. As my mother is vertical on seawater and now kneeling. We have been talking about prophecy, the delicate balance of inhabiting somebody's consciousness, fire in a glass. One holds the other down to her chair, saying, don't get up. There is work here. The floor of the sand-swept room to be swept, glass doors open to the seaside, the access of lit wind consistently. Mother in her robe of white daggers, tending the curtains, smoothing the bed, unhooking the neck of the crane. This is a gift. This is to be a gift.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It's very beautiful and also impressive to recite. For some reason, I imagine they'd be, you'd pick ones that are much shorter, but that's also not a very simple one to recite. So let's talk about that a little bit, because in that, there's so many things you're referencing that sound like it also relates to other aspects of your work, spiritual and queer power, as you said, eco consciousness, and also about home. So, in that particular poem, some of those things seem to be addressed. Does that also tie into the project that you're currently on, working on, which is kind of moving a home or as you were saying earlier?
I think so, definitely. I mean, yes, it all ties in. To be honest, with this project that I'm working on for and with my family, I think I'm too in it to understand how it's going to manifest in the writing later, but I know that it will. I think.
And what is it? Sorry to interrupt, but what is exactly the project Porn with your family? I know you said it was about inheritance and all these kinds of things of social and variety of things, but what is the big picture of this project, quote unquote, with your family that you're embarking on?
You know, I think a lot of families have this situation where, because of different lifestyles of my generation, of millennial generation, suddenly the generations of objects have no easy place to go. And so there's an overload and there's a kind of overstorage.
Of material objects. You're talking about
of material objects in certain homes. And so then what to do with them, and then who's going to do the work of sort of sorting through them. And so I'm in this situation now. My family is in this situation now, and I think it's a really common thing. And I'm very interested in what happens not just when you're sorting through the physical reality of the objects, but also the energetic bonds and the sort of psychic inheritance that those objects hold. And how do you either welcome that inheritance or begin to break it or transform it or discard it? And so being really mindful about the redistribution and the liquidation of a family's assets, and finding a way to mindfully plan for the futures that everyone remaining in the family want to have in relation to those objects, whether that means keeping them or getting rid of them, and how to do that. And so that is sort of the way that I'm thinking about being here now and doing this work, which is, again, it's practical work, but it also feels charged, emotionally charged, psychically charged, creatively charged as well. And I don't know, again, I don't know yet how it's going to tendril out into the next quote-unquote professional thing for me, whether it's just, you know, another book that I write, or whether it tendrils out into some sort of PhD program where I'm sustaining these kinds of inquiries in a certain kind of context, whether that's curatorial studies or poetic studies or some sort of social science. I don't know yet. But all of that being said, it feels very much a continuation of themes and questions and concerns that I have explored in my poetry for the past decade. It feels very connected to the two books that are coming out in the coming year. And it feels, personally, it feels very healing to me to think about being a queer person from a small town in North Carolina, having felt in the past alienated from this place, from the culture of this place, even from my family. And then coming back in a position of power to sort of reconcile a sense of belonging to this place, this culture, and my family. That's a tangled answer to what.
No,
I think
but that's
question,
very
but
clear.
Yeah.
And to me, when I hear that, it's also, it sounds. You talked about it's, you know, it's spiritual weight, emotional weight, and. You know, I could feel that immediately. Of course, you know, family heirlooms, objects. It seems the easiest way to deal with it is to not deal with it, because it's so fraught with I don't know, the weight of the past and who gets what and what's better than what, and why do we hold on to these things, and where do we put them, and what happens with all of our things or the next generation's things. You know, that's so difficult to I think embrace and explore, or that's how it seems to me, because of all the attachments,
totally.
All the things that you can't unravel, which is your family, right? And why this is important to you, because these things, and I have little things around that I realize these are enormously important to me, but literally mean nothing to other people, you know? So that's how those things are cared for over time seems to be.
Totally. And I think, too, you know, I think it's it can be overwhelming, and I think that a really common response is for us to, all of us, to ignore it, to put it off, to say we'll deal with that later. But I think the reality is at some point, you know, these kinds of overwhelming things, somebody has to do them. And the best way, I think, to do them is just to accept to welcome in the burden of it, but also to try to reframe it as possibility, as potential, as an act of potential as well, and to just take it piece by piece. You know, I have a background as a curator and project public program organizer. And in a way, I'm using the same skills that I used in that part of my professional life now in service of my family. And it's just like, yeah, okay, let's make the timeline. Let's make the to-do list. Let's think about the different parts of this project or the different parts of this project using systems thinking. So, yeah.
It's interesting, yeah. I love that idea of applying all those skills to it. Of course, that works perfectly, yeah, as a curator and kind of event organizer. Yeah, you can use those skills. So, well, I wish you success with that, you know, in terms of whatever that means. And I'd also love to hear another poem. What is the next poem you're going to recite?
Sure. So this one, I'll pull a shorter poem, and this is part of the book that's coming out with David called Wig Heavier Than a Boot. And that project, just to give a little bit of background, centers around an alter ego called Petal that she also appears in Witch. She appears in both books. But I perform or have performed as her in isolated, expansive environments, often in rural places, as a way to sort of try to reconcile my belonging to those places and my identity as a queer individual. So I invited David to photograph her navigating these spaces. And so the photographs are of her or me becoming her. And then the poems are written from both of our perspectives. And so there's a series of self-portraits that threads through the book, and this is one of them. Self-portrait. Watching petal like a monk or fire waiting to disappear. Petal will want to open her eyes behind mine, her beak, her voice at my throat, sappy, relentless, soft, and pretending almost the consistency of skin. Bees could not tell the difference. An entire coast in an unfurled leaf of her inviting me to swim, legs like a wrench. Petal is stitching the water. She will take me under, slash. If a tongue should also be involved in the tragedy, answer for it, and pray over its poultry body, a hum in your eyeballs on horizon.
Thank you. So that's really wonderful, you know, and a very interesting way to kind of be reflective and also work with someone else. Tell me a little bit about this book before we go. So that's a poem from it. There'll also be images in there. When will that book come out? What state is it in now?
So Wig Heavier Than a Boot comes out this October, October 2019. And then the full-length collection of poems comes out next April. Wig Heavier Than a Boot brings together 26 of my poems and 34 photographs by David Johnson. We will be at the New York Art Book Fair with Chris Graves, our publisher, in late September for the book launch.
Wonderful. So I'll also, that'll of course also be here in the interview if people want to come, because yes, I would definitely like to come to that, and we'll mark that into interview. So, Philip, I want to ask you the last question, which is, what are you reading at the moment? I'm always curious.
You know, I am reading fiction this summer. I had a moment where I realized that I've been a little neglectful of keeping up with what's happening in contemporary prose, and so three books are on my bedside table at the moment. The Deeper the Water, the Uglier the Fish by Katia Epikina. It's her first novel from Kudala Radio. Here's What You Do, which are short stories by Chris Dennis. And then a book that I recently completed that I loved so much, The Regional Office is Under Attack, which is a novel by Manuel Gonzalez. Highly recommended.
Philip, I want to thank you so much for talking with me today. It's really been a pleasure.
Sure. Thanks, Brainerd.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.